Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast by Believe, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the show, joined alongside my two co-hosts, Bruce Bernstein of Prior Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 20, and World B, let's get started with you on tonight's opening tip.
Yeah, some either bad news or fortunate news, depending on how you want to look at it. They discovered Giannis suffered a sprained ligament in his right wrist that he injured on Thursday, and he will undergo treatment but will not need surgery. And he says he will return to action once his pain subsides. So it's a tough break for the Bucks, but it could have been worse. And you know, he's obviously such a vital part of their team. His numbers throughout the season, top three in scoring and rebounding. He's the number one guy in usage rate in the league, so that's a big deal. The Bucks are an average team without him, 6-5 this year in games he's missed. So see how long they last. They have a challenging, not impossible schedule, both in the immediate and for the rest of the season.
Ross, what do you think, man? Is he irreplaceable? 5.4 assists, number two on the team, in addition to everything World B mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly he's unreplaceable. This is a cause of concern for Milwaukee. Now, granted, thankfully, you know, it isn't anything more serious, but for the time being, this team's got a lot of question marks. We've talked about Bobby Portis having been sidelined the last couple of weeks. Also a tricky situation trying to insert Jay Crowder into the mix now. I mean, of course, yeah, it's nice that he's going to get the gel, probably take a few more shots with Giannis off the floor. But as far as that cohesion of getting him in the group with their star player in Giannis, tough timing for the Bucks right now. They still have two open roster spots. I think they need to go ahead and fill those as soon as possible because they just keep dropping some of their rotation guys and heavy minute guys and Bobby Portis and Giannis. So I'm definitely concerned. But what are your thoughts on that, Bruce?
Well, hopefully Portis is going to be back soon because even though he's certainly nowhere close to Giannis as a player, he's their second best rebounder. So, I mean, if you lose your leading rebounder and someone can come back to get you a few boards, that's obviously going to make a difference. They're locked, obviously. They're in a virtual tie. They're a half game behind Boston for the best record in the East. They've played one fewer game, so they're half game back. But as World B started to allude to, their next five games, four of them are at home. This Friday, the Miami Heat at home. Sunday, Phoenix at home. And who knows, they might be seeing KD in that game.
Yeah.
And then next Tuesday at Brooklyn. All right. Next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday, home against Orlando. And then a week from Saturday, home against Philadelphia, which means Joel Embiid. So based on what I'm looking at in that five-game rip, if they could go 3-2, I think they would be really happy if they can win three of those five.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned hearing that schedule. And even a team like the Orlando Magic, we've talked about them all year, playing better against some of the best teams in the league. If I had to put a prediction on it, I would say they're going to be lucky to go 2-3. Hope they prove me wrong as a Bucks supporter. But challenging times in Milwaukee, and hopefully Giannis can give back sooner rather than later. Bruce, what do you have tonight? Go ahead, World B.
No, I just would say the good thing about the Bucks, the one real good thing is that Holiday's really playing unbelievably well these days, and Middleton looks like he's coming back into swing. So they have that going for him.
No doubt. Bruce, what do you got for us for your opening tip?
I was really, really happy that Donovan Mitchell, on his return to Utah as an all-star starter, was welcomed back so warmly by the Utah fans. Spida played his first five seasons with the Jazz, helped him make the playoffs all five seasons. But in the offseason, he was traded to the Cavs for Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, and Oche Igbaji, and five first-round picks. You know, many times when a great player returns to his old home for the first time, the crowd gives him a very rough reception. Check out LeBron's return to Cleveland after he took his talents to South Beach, right? But the Utah fans, who have been known to treat opposing players pretty poorly, did exactly the opposite. He was received warmly. He paid them back with a 40-point performance. And it was great to see the Utah fans show appreciation for a guy who always gave it 100% when he was their guy.
Absolutely. It was a fun weekend in Utah. We'll definitely get to that here very shortly. I want to give a special shout out to Candace Parker, becoming the first woman to announce the NBA All-Star game. She was a standout college player at Tennessee and former WNBA star, but she's also become an emerging NBA studio talent that has certainly worked hard to earn her stripes. I think she does a great job mixing in a bit of fun along with her professional perspective on the game of basketball, and really enjoyed her commentary throughout the All-Star game. And big congratulations go out to her. That is a huge accomplishment, and I hope she gets some more opportunities to be on the sidelines for those games. So shout out to you, Candace Parker. And with that, I kind of want to open up things up here with our first quarter into our NBA All-Star game weekend recap. And first off, Bruce, got to hand it to you and give you some kudos in the skills challenge. The Utah Jazz were able to go ahead and win that. Were you able to check that out? Did you see Colin Sexton did actually end up participating?
I did. I actually caught everything sort of on tape after the fact. So okay. I kind of knew what happened before I watched it. But I did have the Utah guys winning the skills competition, and I did have Damian Lillard winning the three-point shootout, although I thought he would beat Tatum versus World Beast Choice.
Buddy
I'm having a mental block. Buddy Hield, of course. Buddy Hield, yep. Who won it last year, right? That was my stupid prediction because Michael tells me, well, you know, he could win this thing. He won it last year. And I'm like, yeah, well, I guess I'll just shut up now. But Dame was clutch. He's always been clutch. He was clutch in this event. And I thought it was those two events were great. Mac McClung, well, I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about him in a second, guys, right?
Yeah, no doubt about that. World B, what was your takeaway from Saturday night?
You know, overall, I honestly had a enjoyable experience watching it. I'm not the biggest All-Star Saturday fan as a rule, other than the three-point contest. I think I mentioned last episode, I love that contest. And they try to tweak it around, and to this day, I still don't know why. I think going to five stations, whoever makes the most. I think that's pretty cool. But they did it right. I never have a problem with the way they did it. I came runner-up in that contest. I'll be honest with you. I thought the skills challenge that I saw it or whatever, I thought that was the silliest part of the whole All-Star thing until I watched the game on Sunday. That trumped the skills challenge. Because at least the skills challenge, you had, you know, skills were on display.
Or lack thereof with the rookies. They can't make a shot. I don't know if you caught that.
I was going to give Bruce's props on that because Bruce mentioned the one reason when I took the rookies, which I did, Bruce pointed out accurately that all three guys were horrendous perimeter shooters. And I guess from that standpoint, they lived up to their billing. They lived up to that hype. But they could. I don't know if they made one from the perimeter, and it was really bad. That made it look lousy. But, you know, they seemed to, you know, put an effort into it. The Jazz guys put in, you know, somewhat of an effort into it. You know, they all went into that, you know, looked like they had a bit of an effort. The three-point shooting contest, I said I enjoyed. And then, you know, Mac McClung, really, he was a star tonight.
No doubt. I mean, Mac McClung really revitalized the slam dunk contest, in my opinion. I mean, he put on an absolute show. Broke out some dunks we haven't seen before, really got the crowd into it, and had quite a buzz on social media, so much so that he gained over 100,000 Instagram followers after winning the dunk contest. So pretty amazing night for him. What a great opportunity for that young man. Obviously, he had just gotten his recent call-up by the Sixers just hours before that, I feel like.
He got picked for the invited to the contest just a few hours after he got the call-up to from the G League. It's quite a story. And I thought the best part about it was, first things first, I think Jericho Sims didn't get his due for that's just how high he jumped. His dunks lacked a whole lot of originality. I get it. But I mean, the guy almost was at the chest level on the rim when he jumped on that one dunk. I mean, I don't know anybody else who can do that. I don't. And Mac McClung making every dunk on their first attempt was really, that makes it look all the more impressive. What made, for my money, the best dunk contest 2016, when you had Aaron Gordon against Zach LaVine, was they all, well, when they were all hitting their dunks, they all hit these amazing dunks on the first attempt. And that really, to me, that keeps the crowd interested, keeps the crowd. If you have to take three or four attempts, the crowd kind of loses interest in that dunk, no matter how good it is. I think the way that Mac McClung was able to convert really good dunks on the first attempt really made it special.
I did not pick Mac McClung to win the dunk competition, but there's no question he was the breakout star of All-Star Weekend. Many have suggested that he saved the dunk contest. I don't think I agree with that. I mean, the dunk contest really needs more star power in order to improve it. What needs to be saved is the All-Star game itself. But as long as there's no incentive to play defense, I'm not optimistic. And we're going to talk a little bit about the game, but I want to suggest right now, because, you know, my one-on-one tournament idea was ignored by the league. They can ignore this one too. They need, in order to make this game more interesting to people who actually care about basketball, they need to have an offensive player of the game and a defensive player of the game, because somebody has to have a reason to play defense. And if there's a trophy involved, somebody will try and play defense. And I think, like, Jaren Jackson Jr., right? The only reason that guy's in the All-Star game is because he's a great shot blocker. He had zero block shots in the game. He only played 8 minutes, okay? Which tells you they didn't want Jaren Jackson playing in the game because he was going to screw up this, like, layup line of scoring that they played for 94 feet back and forth. So to me, and we'll talk a little more about the game itself, they need to save the game, not the dunk contest, Ross.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. They got to figure out something with this because those middle quarters especially are ones that are kind of just a bore fest. But there was one defensive play that turned out to be very interesting in the post-game comments, Bruce. LeBron went up to block Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he ended up actually hurting his finger. After the game, SGA was spoke on that and said, you know, he didn't really appreciate the defensive effort by LeBron since it wasn't being played the whole game, and that he's actually got something for him the next time they play each other. And he meant it. Like, it was like a legit, like, anger that, like, he was letting everybody else get dunks and I go and try to get mine. And you know, he tries to meet me at the rim, and he took exception to that. So I'm actually very, you know, very much looking forward to this next matchup between SGA and LeBron. And, you know, maybe could it stem from the fact that SGA's OKC ball club beat LeBron on the night that he broke the record? Not sure, but just thought that was a little interesting tidbit there after the game as far as something that mattered to a guy like SGA.
LeBron mixing it up with a few people. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute or two.
You know, the problem with the All-Star game, I've always, as an all-around sports fan, I've always enjoyed baseball's All-Star game. I've always put that in the upper tier of, if you had to rank them, that would always be number one for me. And then it was the NBA All-Star game, and I couldn't tell you the last time I watched the Pro Bowl for the NFL. And the competitive, it's supposed to be a showcase of this incredible talent that we have. It's the most efficient season offensively the league has ever seen. They're scoring all over the place. And it should be, you want to see these guys, I want to see guys drain a jumper in somebody's face. It doesn't have to be, you know, Detroit bad boy Pistons defense of the 80s, but it's got to be something. It's really become an embarrassment. And it was not a good look for the league. I know they put on a show and there were a lot of good moments outside of the game from that night that were definitely enjoyable and memorable, but there's got to be something more for the game because it's a bad look on the NBA and it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, and I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts on just the two captains picking teams. What were your thoughts on that? Bruce, you had mentioned that no one really wanted to play with Jaren Jackson Jr. That seems correct, as he was the last reserve picked when it came to picking teams. But we'll start with you, Bruce. What were your thoughts on just LeBron and Giannis selecting their squads?
It was one of the highlights of the night, if you want my opinion. I really enjoyed it. I loved how they did it because I really thought LeBron was trying to play some head games with Giannis when he called out the Greek Freak and said, Giannis has changed. because he chose Damian Lillard first as his reserve instead of Drew Holiday. I think he was trying to plant a little seed of doubt in Drew Holiday's head about Giannis's commitment to him as a teammate. You know, maybe, you know, maybe you don't need to like help Giannis cover every mistake, because look at how he did you when it came time to pick sides. But honestly, I mean, Drew's not going to fall for that garbage. And even though LeBron may have really, you know, tried to play a little game, Giannis, there's no question about Giannis's commitment to Drew Holiday as his teammate. I don't think it's true that there's any, would ever be a problem, but I wouldn't put it past LeBron to try that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take the flip side on that. I think Giannis kind of sparked that whole interaction because he took Damian Lillard first, who I believe he anticipated LeBron wanting on his team. But very interesting that LeBron did have that comment. And the night before, Drew Holiday actually subbed in for Giannis to be a part of the Team Antetokounmpo team in the Skills Challenge. So just very interesting how that transpired. And another one of my favorite parts of that night was when Giannis tried to select Ja Morant as a reserve. And they're like, no. Like, he's not on the board yet. You got to wait your turn here.
See, and that's just one of the things I mentioned. That was a terrific idea they did right before the game to do the draft, and nobody knows. I thought that was fun. It makes things interesting. It was. I'm a fan of new ideas. I think game back, like baseball has image problems because they refused to make any changes for years. Now they're starting to do it, and people criticize. That's fine, but they're trying to do something. The NBA tried to do something here, and I thought it was a really good idea, right up until the game started.
And speaking of that game, Ross, let me jump in front for a second here, and I mean, what a disappointment! What an absolute utter waste of time. At halftime, the score was 99-92. The final score was 184-175. How can I describe the defense? Well, the best I can do is I've seen better defense in the pregame layup lines, okay? Team LeBron attempted a total of zero free throws in the game. Nobody on Team Giannis even committed a foul to put anybody at the free throw line. And Team Giannis only attempted four free throws, okay? So Team LeBron, zero free throw attempts. Team Giannis, just four. There were a total of three block shots in the entire game, okay? Including a total, as I said a few moments ago, of zero by Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., because the only reason he's in that game is because he's a shot-blocking machine. So that's why he played 8 minutes, as we said, not to repeat myself. I don't mean to be a buzzkill, people, but watching 48 minutes of uncontested buckets is not my idea of anything worth my time.
Not at all.
I think the only glassful approach I have on this, Bruce, is we both – went away from that game, winner, winner, chicken dinners, as Giannis said after. You know, Team Giannis finally defeated Team LeBron, and your boy Jason Tatum took home the MVP honors. And despite the lack of defense, I mean, man, was that guy on fire. I mean, we certainly missed Steph Curry. It was evident having Steph out there would have made it at least more fun with the long-range threes and hitting them in rapid-fire succession. But I really enjoyed the one-on-one show we got between your Celtics. I thought it was a lot of fun to see Tatum and Jaylen Brown go back and forth with one another, and really kind of gave us the best sneak peek we would ever get to your one-on-one contest. What did you think of the two teammates going back-to-back?
Well, it was the only competitive chunk of that game where we actually saw any passion other than just, you know, throwing up 45-foot threes. They went at it for a few minutes, and we got a glimpse of what it could look like. And after the game, Tatum was asked about it, and here's what he had to say.
You know, it was like another day at the office for us, right? You know, been on the same team for 6 years now. We've played countless number of one-on-one games, scrimmages against each other. You know, we've always, you know, kind of brought the best out of each other. So, you know, it was a normal day for us, just millions of people watching on one of the biggest stages. So we just had a little fun with it.
Yeah, they had a little fun with it. And Tatum had a little fun scoring 55 points. And Boston's two stars combined for 90. But if I were JT, okay, that MVP trophy would go on the back row of my trophy case because it means next to nothing that he scored 55 points in this game. And it was funny. Even when Adam Silver did the trophy presentation at the end, he had to restart his intro because he forgot to mention Kia, which was the sponsor. How fitting.
I'm sure Kia didn't necessarily mind the way the game turned out. Their name wasn't attached to that game, that particular game.
Well, it was cool ending as far as Damian Lillard going ahead and finishing it off as well. Damian went to Weber State, which was about 30 minutes up the road. So winning the three-point shootout and then putting the cap on that game last night with the Elam ending was pretty special. So it wasn't fun throughout, but you know there were bits and pieces of it that I think are worth noting, and at least we got some enjoyment out of some of the stuff that was.
By the way, Ross, that's the other thing. The Elam ending idea for the All-Star game is terrific. I've loved that. And now I was honestly, I think I texted you guys, say, you know, after watching, wake me up when we get to the fourth quarter, because then I'll pay attention. And I was looking forward to it because we've seen some really competitive games in the over the years in the fourth quarter. And it was just wasn't even they even took that away from us for the most part in this game.
Yep. And with that, we'll go ahead and get into our second quarter here. And let's provide an update here on the buyout market. We'll first start off with Kevin Love making his decision to go down to South Beach, help out the Miami Heat. We'll go ahead and start with you. What do you think about Kevin Love? And now there's reports coming out that your old friend in Charlotte, Cody Zeller, might be joining the ball club as well.
If the Kevin Love angle, if he can hit his threes, he's kind of fallen off in the three-point variety there this year. His numbers are a little bit down. If he can hit the three, it will really help them because the Heat have gone from being the best three-point shooting team a season ago to down near the bottom this year. It's really been a detriment for them. And if he can provide that spark, it's going to be great for them as far as really being a contender. I don't think they're out of contention range in the East. They need some, you know, they really need to step it up. They need a guy like Kevin Love to really pick it up. And Cody Zeller, just another guy that provides depth or whatever for them. The other thing I'll mention on this, you got to wonder, though, if the Cleveland Cavaliers don't think you're going to good enough to help you in their playoff run, how much do you really have? How much are the Heat can the Heat expect to have in Kevin Love? I mean, here's the Cavaliers in a much better competition standpoint, you know, contending standpoint in the East than Miami, and they decide they don't think he's going to help them. So,
because Miami's desperate for offense, they are dead last in the NBA in points per game. Number 30 out of 30 teams in points per game, okay? So anybody that can make a three, even someone like Kevin Love, who's been hampered by that bad thumb, he hasn't even played in the previous 12 games for Cleveland. So he was pretty much, you know, dead man walking there one way or the other. So, all right, you know, Miami's also a very poor rebounding team too. I mean, 27th in the league in rebounds, okay? So 30th in scoring, 27th in rebounding. It's amazing that they're in the playoff hunt given those deficiencies that they have. Kevin Love's not going to solve all that stuff. He might help a little bit. His defense is brutal. You're going to see him get put in the pick and roll time after time after time, and he's going to have to put up numbers or else his plus minus is going to be in the red for sure. I don't blame Miami for making the move, but he's not going to be a difference maker at this point. It's his 15th year, okay? I don't think he's making a big difference. But he could hit you a shot late in the game when he comes in and, you know, or maybe grab you a rebound. And that's probably his upside and all they really expect out of him.
Yeah. And I'll say this, I think he's going to be able to help them stretch the floor out offensively. But, you know, from one former video coordinator to another and Coach Spo, my recommendation is to start running a bit more. I mean, Kevin Love is one of the all-time best with the outlet pass. He's definitely going to help them out rebounding. They got to push it and go. Start using some of these shooters out in the open court. So I'm hoping they'll go ahead and run a little bit more in the short spurts that K-Love's out on the floor. But overall, I mean, I'm not going to get too excited about this move. And going from one non-exciting move to the next, just came out earlier this evening that Patrick Beverley plans on signing with the Chicago Bulls. Do you guys have any thoughts to put on that one? I can't really I'm kind of confused on where to go with this. It's like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know what that's going to do for Chicago.
Bruce? I'll make it quick. I'll make it quick. Thanks, but no thanks, world.
Yeah.
Does a shoulder shrug qualify as a thought on this? Because I really don't. I have a real hard time understanding what the Bulls are. I really don't know. Do they think they can compete? Are they just trying to do enough to get into the play-in tournament? Because, you know, Patrick Beverly, really? I mean, this is – they're out of the mix right now. Is it just we can't afford to even not make the play-in tournament? We have to do everything we can to at least say we made a postseason appearance, even though it doesn't qualify? Because there's really nothing to this otherwise.
I mean, Ayo Dosunmu and – Kobe White are these young guys. They need minutes, right? They need to play. Any minutes you give Patrick Beverly and even a guy like Goran Dragic, who's a better player than Patrick Beverly even now. I mean, if he was in a wheelchair, he'd be a better offensive player than Patrick Beverly. So I don't get it at all. It makes no sense.
Well, let's go to another spicy one here. Russell Westbrook has reportedly reached an agreement to join the LA Clippers. Really curious on how this one will work. I obviously warned you, World B, that this was maybe on the horizon, but let's get started with you. What are your thoughts on Westbrook staying in LA, not having to find a new home and just going to report to the other practice facility?
Well, he knows the tops of all the backboards there that he and many of his jump shots have ended up. So he's got that going for him. Yeah, he doesn't have to worry about finding new spots there. So honestly, the Clippers, I mean, all straight, the Clippers are an ISO team on offense. They're top 10 in possessions on isolation. So I mean, from that standpoint, you figure it plays right into Westbrook's game. They're also one the problem is they're also one of the more efficient teams in isolation that doesn't play into Westbrook's game on isolation because there's nothing about Westbrook efficiency and isolation that go together. So I don't know what that is going to mean for, you know, for their efficiency there, but you know, his style fits right into them, their plan.
This was the most predictable buyout move of all of the ones I could have thought of. Okay. Russ is an LA native. He can move down the hall from the Lakers locker room to the Clippers locker room. Doesn't have to ship his gear to a new city. PG-13 lobbied for him. It's a low-risk move for the Clippers, I think. And I expect Russ to play very well for the Clippers. They're 3-0 versus the Lakers this year. So if you're Westbrook, I guess if you can't beat them, join them. And go ahead and circle Wednesday, April 5th, when the Lakers and Clippers play their final regular season game against each other. That one's on ESPN. It's a Wednesday night game. It's a home game for the Clippers. My big question about this move is he going to start for those guys or is he going to come off the bench? What do you think, Russ?
I think he's going to start. I think he's going to earn his way into that starting lineup for Tyronn Lue. I think he could, you know, give him a boost of toughness defensively and continue to strengthen that defense if all five guys on the floor are bought into that. Might not start like the first few games, but I would be kind of surprised if he wasn't the starter come, say, mid-March. So what about you, World B? What do you think of that? You think he's a starter or a reserve?
I think World B's mic might have frozen.
I think he gets his dad shot.
All right, come on back, World. Rejoin the living here.
All right, I'm sorry. Well, thank you. Sorry about that. I say you put him in the lineup right away. Get those bad shots out of there and, you know, get them all warmed up and let him get that 0 for 5 from the field out of the way and then to pass it off to Kawhi and PG-13. And it could work for their offense. They need offense. They've been better when they gotten healthy, but it just hasn't been all the way back. And if he can help them offensively, because they're a really good defensive team, Ty Lue is a great coach. I've talked about him forever. I think if anybody can turn him around and keep him on the right path, he can.
Yeah. I mean, right now they're starting Terrence Mann at point guard. So, I mean, to actually bring in a legitimate point guard to help run your offense, I don't think can hurt you. And if he's awful with his first couple of shots, then you go back to Terrence Mann just running the point until Norman Powell comes in and kind of helps out with the ball handling duties. Not sure if you guys have any more buyout guys you want to talk about, but one guy I want to talk to before we hit our halftime break is Terrence Ross. He made his debut late Thursday night after we taped our last podcast, and I was quite impressed with his minutes. I mean, he looked really good out of the pick and roll, made some great passes, good feeds, dishing it off to the roller. I think he had double-digit scoring in that game. Didn't shoot it particularly well, but he's going to add that with time. And I think he's been a nice addition to this Phoenix Suns team that we've talked about. You know, do they have enough depth? And if he can help with the playmaking while Cameron Payne is still sidelined and Chris Paul needs a breather, I think he's only going to help this ball club. And, you know, I'm really impressed with what he showed in just one game, and hopefully he can keep it up for Suns fans.
I think he's a valuable guy coming off of your bench. I mean, he had 16 points in 25 minutes in that game, which is, you know, the bad news. I mean, he's can be really streaky. I mean, he can shoot you into a game, and he can shoot you out of a game, okay? In that game, he was only 1 out of 8 shooting threes, but he was 6 out of 9 on twos. So if he has proper shot selection and you know, and he's playing the game, he's more than capable as a mid-range scorer. I like this move for Phoenix.
No doubt.
I agree. I liked him in Orlando. I thought he did a good job there. He just was not part of their youth movement, and that's why he, you know, didn't see – he saw a decline in minutes to the point where he just wasn't playing at all. But his game hasn't really – deteriorated like his minutes have. He just got caught in a system and a philosophy that he wasn't a part of anymore. So I think he can be a valuable piece for them going forward. Now that they, you know, they've added Durant, they have a lot of talent. They need depth, and he's got it.
And Josh Okogie looks like he's turning a corner. He's got some boosted confidence, getting some playing time for this Suns team right now. And I think he'll continue to be a big-time contributor for the Suns ball club moving forward, even with KD back in the lineup. And as you mentioned, Bruce, you know, the shot selection with Terrence Ross. Well, the good news is when Kevin Durant's in there, I mean, there's going to be less chances there to shoot the ball anyway. So he'll be totally fine.
Set a screen for KD. Why don't you? Hey, a couple other names, just a few other minor names in the potential buyout market I wanted to just mention. A couple of former overall number one picks could be in the buyout market. Derrick Rose, who is yet to take his warmups off for the Knicks in calendar year 2023, has been injury prone, obviously. So that long rest might be good for him. I think a team like the Sixers or the Grizzlies should grab him. I think as just kind of some point guard insurance for those two teams, I think he'd be good. John Wall is another overall number one pick. He had his moments with the Clippers, but then he got hurt. He probably has similar value to D Rose at the moment, strictly as second or third stringer. But the guy I, as a Celtics fan, have my eye on is Will Barton, who's a 6'6 wing that's had a rough season in Washington. He may very well be bought out. I'd love to see Boston pick him up for some wing depth. I think he could be, you know, he could give them some of the same types of play that that Derek White gives them. I see that some similarities in their games. So I'd love to have him as just an insurance policy off the bench.
You know, he's just a year removed from being a starter on the Nuggets. I mean, he's not, it's not like his career fell off the map here, but I don't really understand how, when he was just a key member of a really good Nuggets team just a year ago. I know it didn't work out in Washington, so I understand why he, you know, is a candidate or is, you know, for another team, but it's a weird thing to see him in this position given where he was just a year ago.
And what's interesting about this is actually a homecoming for Will Barton. He's from the Baltimore area. So I'm just purely speculating here, but maybe there's just too much hometown distraction of friends and family around, and maybe he plays better when he's, you know, away from his loved ones, which is weird to say, but, you know, sometimes they get too focused on off the court stuff than on the court. And maybe if he's just focused on, you know, the last 25 games or so, he'll be in a much better position. So definitely like him. I think he's, I mean, if he becomes available, he'd be the top target for all the contending teams. I think Will Barton still has a lot left in the tank. But with that, we're going to go ahead and reach our halftime break. We will be back with you all here with the third quarter shortly. And we're back with our third quarter. And for the start of the second half, I wanted to talk a little bit about the issue of load management and how that had surfaced at All-Star Weekend. World B, I know you're super passionate about this topic, so I'm going to go ahead and get started with you.
Well, it's a definite problem. It may be problem number one with this league. It was a hot topic during All-Star Weekend. It's a real problem because nobody has a solution. Nobody really knows. The commissioner doesn't even know. The commissioner was asked about it, and he talked about how unfortunate it was for fans, as we've mentioned on this podcast, how unfortunate it was for fans to show up to see, for example, the Golden State Warriors in Cleveland one time all year, and Steve Kerr sits everybody. And, of course, they go and beat the Cavaliers anyway, make us all look he all looks like a GM. But even Steve Kerr acknowledged it, that it was unfortunate. But nobody has any solutions. And in his press conference over the weekend, Adam Silver said, you know, the mindset of teams in this league is to, quote, optimize performance for the playoffs. So it's devaluing the league, the regular season even more, which to me means you're not going to shorten the season. You can't – that's not going to be an option. I know that's one of the things considered. You're not taking away money, you know, 10 games a year for all these teams in revenue. That's not going to be an option, I don't think. Taking away – the league is doing everything they can to keep players on the court because they've eliminated – they're still back-to-back. There's going to be. You can't avoid it. But they're trying to do more back-to-backs against the same team in the same city. That's huge. You know, we saw it, Bruce saw it, and I saw it in December when Orlando had to go up and play Boston. They played them on a Friday, and they played again on Sunday, a back-to-back with a day off in between. And, you know, it's a weird thing to see. A lot of teams, you know, they're trying to do it for everybody. It's a real problem, and it doesn't sound like anybody has a solution, and it doesn't sound like players really care for a solution. And teams obviously don't care.
This is going to be coming up when they negotiate the next collective bargaining agreement. And nobody wants to hear about the collective bargaining agreement. It's boring, right? Well, this is going to be a major aspect of their discussions. And one aspect might be, should there be a minimum number of games played for players to be eligible for postseason awards like MVP, Rookie of the Year, Scoring Champion? If something like that is negotiated, and I'm not sure if the union would buy it, the owners probably would, but I don't know if the union would, then that's going to really incentivize the players to play more. And so I don't know if it'll happen, but I think something like that is going to be required for it to happen. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that's the only option we have at this point is to try to have those negotiations and put some of those clauses in there as far as games played in order to even be an all-star game starter like Zion Williamson was this year. And then all those awards as well. The tricky part with that is, Bruce, the fact that a lot of these guys have contracted incentives. You know, if they become an all-star or they win an award, they got big money. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars in bonuses. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the union will go ahead and buy that, but I think I think and I hope the league and the owners put up a big fight for this to be implemented, because I think at this point it's all we've got to kind of have as leverage against the NBA, which has turned into a huge players league. So should be very interesting to see how this develops with time, but it is a major concern moving forward. A couple interesting facts from the All-Star Weekend as far as players talking and more positive news here. LeBron James stated that these last 23 games of the season are some of the most important regular season games of his career, and that he plans on doing everything in his power to be available for each of those games. So not sure how much I buy that, but certainly want to continue to monitor that. Did you guys catch that as well?
I did. I saw a really funny comment from somebody on The Athletic. I subscribe to The Athletic, and there was a story about this on there. So some just fan. I don't remember his name. Sorry if you're listening that I didn't mention your name. Some guy says, so LeBron James said next 23 games are the most important games of his career, and he's planning on doing everything possible to play in all 23. Anthony Davis also said these next 23 games are the most important of his career, and he's hoping to play in at least 12 or 13 of them.
I mean, what does it say, in all honesty, what does it say about the state that we're in that LeBron James has to make a comment like that to, I want to play in all 23 games. It's important. Well, it should be a given.
Yeah.
But it's to the point where he's got, and it could have been anybody, he just went up and said it, but he thinks it's that important to his career to finish these 23 games. Well, that's great, but that was assumed. That's assumed that you're going to play in 23 games at the end of the year. There are people, you know, that pay a lot of money to watch you play, and they come hoping it's you. They don't come to watch, Darvin Ham coach.
Listen, the Lakers got to leapfrog a bunch of teams just to make the play-in tournament, okay? So here's what they have left, okay? They have two games each remaining with the following teams: Utah, Oklahoma City, Golden State, Minnesota, and Dallas. They have one game left against New Orleans, okay? Each of those games, each of those clusters of two games, if the Lakers go 1-1 against all those teams, they're not going to make it. They're going to have to win two games against a lot of these teams, okay? And that's not going to be easy to do, okay? Load management, if you're the coach, if you're Darvin Ham, if you're every coach, because and we've talked about this before, because they're so tightly bunched between, like, you know, 6 and 13, whatever, every game is like two games. Everything is magnified. Yep. So with all these teams battling each other, it's going to be hard to load manage their best guys when every head-to-head game has that potential to be a two-game swing.
By the way, last season, 605 players played in at least one game. Five played in all 82. And only two of those five averaged 30 minutes a game. So it's just like, they're just not – there's not the incentive, to Bruce's point. There should be a way to. It shouldn't have to be this way, but there should be a way to provide incentives for these guys to want to be out there a little bit more. Now, if you're injured, all this is go under the assumption if you're injured, you're injured. It's, when nobody's suggesting play with a highly sprained ankle or anything like that. If you're injured, you're injured. But not everybody here is injured that we're talking about. The situation is not because of injury.
And Bruce, you mentioned how much those games are amplified for the Lakers. And just kind of want to go back to you bringing up April 5th game against Russell Westbrook and the Los Angeles Clippers. That game might have serious, very serious playoff implications on it. I mean, that could be so much fun. I mean, Russ is going to get his revenge game in a game that LeBron's got to win. I mean, that's much watch TV for me. I mean, that could be really, really good. So
we'll all be up late that night. We'll all be watching that one.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll go ahead and move into our fourth quarter here. We got our mailbag open with some listener-submitted questions. Our first question comes in from Rachel, and Rachel wants to know, do we think the Kyrie-Luka pairing will bring out the best in each of them or the opposite? Bruce?
I wonder if that's Rachel who calls into SiriusXM radio all the time. She's a really good fan. She's always calling into Frank Isola and Brian Scalabrini's show. She's very, very, very smart and very funny too. So Rachel, if that's you listening to 48 minutes, let us know. We'd love to know that you're on team 48. Okay. Luka and Kyrie. All right. I have very little confidence that this is going to work. Kyrie is more than likely a rental. He'll probably be headed to the Lakers after the season. Luka is the superior player, and he doesn't need Kyrie to bring out the best in him. I'm not really sure Kyrie can help him get much better than he already is. Kyrie has a way of eventually chipping away at the spirit of a team, and I expect the same in Dallas. Will they put up some spectacular numbers? Yes, they will. Will they suddenly become plus defenders? Doubtful.
Will be?
Well, I'd say so far, to Bruce's point, they are putting up the numbers. So it's hard to argue that they're making each other worse. I mean, Kyrie's averaging 28 a game with 7 assists and shooting 53% since the trade, since he came there. Luka, since the trade was announced and he got there, is averaging over 30 a game, over 8 rebounds and almost 7 assists. He's also shooting 53% from the field. He's not losing out in touches. In fact, he's getting more touches since before the trade. He was one of the top 5 in the league in touches, about 90 a game. And now since then, since the trade, since he's been back from his injury, he's getting 110 touches a game. So it's not it may be hurting the other guys, the other 3 guys on the court alongside. But, I mean, with these guys on the court, the Mavs offense is really clicking. 126 points per 100 possessions when the 2 of them are on the court. Now, the problem is they've both been injured or sat out, so they've only had 58 minutes together so far. That's barely over a game's worth since early February. So we need to see a little bit more. But for me right now, it is working out.
Yeah, you mentioned the 56 minutes, and that's what makes it really tough to answer Rachel's question here is the fact that we're still in the honeymoon stage, right? I mean, he had just got acquired by Dallas. They played 56 minutes together. So far, so good. I think it's going to be fine for this season. I mean, Kyrie's got enough personal interest in playing well the rest of the season with an upcoming contract that he's looking to hopefully get a big payday. But if I'm looking at this long term, as far as the question is concerned, I don't buy it. I don't think it's going to be a good pairing for the long term. So hopefully Mark Cuban listens to our show, because I'm not buying a long term relationship here between the two.
Let me ask you this. What happens if I can't remember how many games they have left. Well, let's say for the sake of argument, they have 20 games left and they go 15-5 with those guys. Now what happens? Now what do you do? If is it working out? Does Kyrie want to stay there? Is he still gone? Do the Mavs try to do everything to get, keep those two together? If they go on one of these runs, I don't know if they are, but I'm with you. I think we need to see how it plays out. But if it does play out well, this could be a fun offseason.
My gut tells me he's gone no matter what happens, even if they won a championship, which they're not going to. What is your gut telling you guys?
I think they're going to be totally fine up until the playoffs. They might even make it far in the playoffs, but I think that series that they do lose, because I don't see them winning the championship either. Whenever that series comes, I think there's going to be major drama that comes out, maybe some shots taking and post-game press conferences between the two of them. I think that's when we really see the blow up, or even Kyrie kind of showing his cards that I'm out of here. This was all a stunt just to try to show you I can still perform at a high level and really elevate a team with my presence. And now I'm going to go get paid elsewhere. But Worldby, what's your thoughts on that?
I'd be surprised if he was with Dallas next year. Okay. I mean, that's just how it is. I'm just throwing that possibility out. I was one of the guys, maybe the only one of the 3 of us, that thought when the trade was made that wasn't the worst idea. It wasn't a bad idea on the Mavericks to try and bring it together at the time. This is all pre-KD going to Phoenix, because I told you at the time, I thought the West was up for grabs. So why not go for it if you're the Mavericks and you have a legitimate chance to go for it? Why not go for it? Then, a week later to get KD, and that changed the conference again. And then, so I still think it was a good move to try. I don't think it. And by the way, if Kyrie leaves, they're going to have a lot of cap space. The Mavericks are to try and go get their own max player or somebody they want. If, I don't know who else would be out there. James Harden opts out or something, becomes a free agent. Wouldn't you like to go from Kyrie to James Harden?
No,
he's the biggest potential free agent I can think of in my head right now. That could be available next year.
I'd rather have Harden at this point, because at least Harden has modified his game to the point where he knows what a great passer he is, and he's passing.
That's true.
And Kyrie is always going to be a score first guy.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I would rather have Harden. I totally agree.
Well, we want to thank Rachel for her question. That was a fantastic one on the Dallas Mavericks. And our second question comes in from Justin. Justin wants to know, who's more dangerous now? And I think he's taking into consideration Russell Westbrook is now on the Clippers. But who's more dangerous now, the Phoenix Suns or the LA Clippers? Bruce?
I think this is a great question. I love this question. I keep going back and forth on this one, which is why it's a great question, because it's close. I mean, you know, there's no right or wrong. Their records are almost identical. Clippers are a half game ahead of the Suns. Okay. Phoenix adds Kevin Durant, Terrence Ross, and TJ Warren, while they lost Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. Clippers add Russell Westbrook, Mason Plumlee, Bones Highland, Eric Gordon. If they meet in the playoffs, I see a seven-game series, and I think I would have to give a slight edge to the Suns.
World B?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was, you know, we've said on this show, I was backing the Clippers as far as when they got healthy, when Kawhi got healthy, when Paul George got healthy. At the beginning of the month, I thought, wait till you see this team explode now. There are no back-to-backs for these guys to sit out. Watch them make their move. And then February 10th on a Friday comes when they're playing a big game against the Bucks, and Kawhi decides to sit out for injury management. With that, when they had the whole weekend off, by the way. They didn't play a game again until the following Tuesday. But he had to take that day off to injury management. So I'm kind of soured on him. Kawhi does not show that he's serious about this season. And that's fine. He doesn't have to be. You know, he can worry about his health, and if that's the case, that's fine. I'm not here to question whether he's playing soft or any of that stuff. I can't do that. But that month was the perfect opportunity for him to play every game injury-free, as long as he was injury-free, and show and put the Clippers right back in it. And they still might. There's still time left in the month. But at the end of the day, assuming everybody's healthy, one team has Kevin Durant, and the other team doesn't. And I'll go with the team that has Kevin Durant.
And for me, I think the biggest separator are two things. There's two factors in this. It's the consistency, whether it be the play on the floor or even who's available, and the discipline. The discipline being the number one thing for me. I mean, the Clippers have had the names all season long. I mean, you look at their roster, they've got a great list of names from top to bottom of guys that can really play, or at least previously were stars. But with the Suns, I mean, they just have a little bit more discipline to their game. You know, I feel like in crunch time, they don't turn the ball over. They don't take as many bad shots. This Clippers team is always a wild card. I really don't know which Clippers team we're going to see on a night-to-night basis. The Suns are going to compete, whether they have Devin Booker or not, whether they have Chris Paul or not. And if it came to a seven-game series, I'm with you, Bruce. I would take the Phoenix Suns. I think it would maybe even just go six. I think it'd be a fun matchup, but I think the Suns down the stretch, especially with Kevin Durant in the fourth quarter with Devin Booker. I mean, I would take those two taking a last second shot more than I would Kawhi Leonard or Paul George at this point. And those are two great guys to take a last shot, but I think Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are two of the coldest in the game when it comes to the clutch moments.
Indeed. I think we all agree. We all like the Suns by a hair.
April 9th is their last meeting.
Perfect. So we'll have to look forward to that one. And want to thank Justin for his question. And again, everyone for participating in the mailbag portion of our show. Keep sending in the good questions, and we'll be sure they get answered here on the 48 Minutes podcast. And tonight, there is no best bets. My only best bet at the moment and advice for you all is to save your money, and we'll be sure to be back with you with best bets on Friday. No games going on, no action to be had. So just save your money for now, and we'll get back at you on Friday with that. So that leads us right into our final thoughts here. And Bruce, I'll let you get started on this.
Thanks, Ross. Mark Spears is a Hall of Famer. If you're a hardcore NBA fan, you may know who he is. If you're a casual fan, you probably don't. Mark is this year's winner of the Kurt Gowdy Media Award from the Basketball Hall of Fame for excellence in print journalism. Mark and I worked together at ESPN, where he was hired to write for the platform formerly known as The Undefeated, which has since been renamed Antscape. Antscape is dedicated to creating, highlighting, and uplifting the diverse stories of Black identity. I was a big fan of Mark's writing and was the first producer to use him on TV at the network. We became friends over the years, and I knew he would eventually win this award. His intellectual honesty and his fearlessness in telling stories turned him into a legend in the world of basketball journalism. I've been really fortunate in my career to work with a number of Gowdy Award winners. Mike Breen, Jackie McMullen, Mark Stein, David Aldridge, Michael Wilbon, and now Mark Spears takes his well-deserved place among the legends of hoop journalism. And I might add, congratulations also to Holly Rowe of ESPN, who won the Gowdy Award for Electronic Journalism. We never worked together, but Holly is beloved by everyone in the business and is one of the best ever at her job.
Well said there, Bruce, and congrats to Holly and Mark on their well-deserved honors this year, and we're super excited for them. Thanks for sharing that. World B, what do you got for our final thoughts here tonight?
Well, I want to give a shout-out to a guy I previously mentioned before, Anthony Edwards, the guy I thought should have been an all-star before anybody else thought he should have been an all-star. But this is not about his on-the-court performance. This is about what he said during the all-star break. He's played in every game this year, and he says he wants to play every game this year. And at a time when we just had a discussion about load management, this is the guy that thinks more of the players in the league should be making an effort to try and play every game. He says, you know, his quote was, quote, just play, man. If you're 80%, you got to be out on the court. He doesn't understand the whole concept of sitting just to rest and rest yourself. And now some people may say, I've seen backlash on this, saying, well, he's just 21. He's not a veteran. Wait till he gets to be in the league a few more years. They can say all that all they want, but they can't say that he's wrong, because he's one of the few in this whole situation that's been right.
And he's always been a press conference dandy, and nothing truer than what he said this weekend at All-Star Weekend. So props to you, Ant-Man. We definitely agree with you as NBA fans. As for me, I just want to use my final thought to give our listeners a sneak peek on an exciting guest announcement for Friday's show. We're going to have on a three-time NBA champion, 15-year NBA veteran in Scott Williams. He will be joining the show, and really looking forward to having him on. And one quick fun fact for our listeners on Scott, he's one of four players who have been teammates with both Michael Jordan and LeBron James. The other three, Larry Hughes, Brendan Haywood, and Jerry Stackhouse. And of those four, though, Scott's the only one who was teammates with MJ at his peak during the Bulls championship runs. So the other three players were with MJ on the Wizards. It should be a lot of fun to talk with Scott, ask him about MJ, talk a little bit about LeBron. And for a guy that's played in the league for 15 years, might be good to get his take on load management, because as we know, that's probably not something he was used to. So really looking forward to that. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, and we'll see you back here Friday. Take care.